The Wisdom of Mary Thomas. Mary Thomas is a name known to many. For such a tiny woman, she had a big impact on everyone she met, from her humble beginnings to her time in the residential school in Kamloops, through to her adult years drenched in poverty and despair. She overcame obstacles that would have destroyed most people. She told us over and over again that the only way she could keep going was through the love of her children and her passion for her native culture. Spend the day with her children and grandchildren, teaching her traditional crafts and telling stories was, for her, the best days, especially if it ended with a trip to the bingo hall. Despite her many accomplishments, accolades, and awards, she remained, to the very end, a humble woman, wanting only to help wherever she could and asking nothing in return. She was sharp and intelligent, with a quick wit and enough political savvy to know when to speak and when to be silent. The love she gave was returned threefold, never more evident than at the service to honor her passing, when people of all ages, color, even nationality were in attendance to pay their respects. Mary Thomas, beloved and missed.
If she is a good woman, like she's good at drying meat and drying fish and picking fruit and carrying wood and tanning deer hides and all that, and if her husband died, the older brother automatically took over her as his wife. In fact, there have been times where if somebody else outside of the family decided, oh, I'm going to marry, I just was in the way. Well, what they would do to me is take the oldest pair of moccasins, real old moccasins. The grandmother, my in-laws, the old grandmother would take those old moccasins and she would come to me after they buried my husband. They'd take one pigtail and cut that off, put the old moccasin around your neck, turn you around, go back to your own people. You're going back as a disgrace because you're a lazy woman, you're no good man.
How did a child, you know, either a son or a daughter, get along with the mother's brother and the mother's sister? Did they have very much to do with either the mother's brother or the mother's sister?
She said that she doesn't think there was any difference anyway. They all were like one big family. Very, very close. They were very close together. There was no difference. Your uncle or your aunts from your father or mother's side, they got along very well.
What about, you know, when a woman died, or when a man died, most of the stuff was either given to the children or distributed around. What sort of things would the wife get? What sort of things could she keep?
This is something, when a woman's husband dies, she gives away everything that he had that was of any value, any use. Mm-hmm. And this was a sign of mourning, that you just stripped yourself of everything. Because anyway, right after, well, the other brothers, the family, they start providing her with new things anyway. But if anything was of any value to them, she just stripped herself of everything, her and her children. Because this was a sign of mourning, that she was in sorrow.
Even the house and cooking utensils?
Well, long ago, they never had a separate building or separate utensils. They lived as a community. They lived as one big family. If you lived by your, you know, near your in-laws, you had your own things, like, well, that was all given away to either side of the family. It could be to the husband's side, and it could be to the other side, the woman's side. Yeah. But then she just gives everything away.
Yeah, even things like a cooking pot. If she
everything is given away. She's just sitting there with nothing.
I see. And if a wife died, what would happen to the things that the wife owned, like her cooking pots and her digging stick and her needles?
Well, that's the same thing. The husband gives that all away.
He'd give that all away.
He gives everything away. This is a sign of mourning, a sign of sorrow, that he doesn't want to keep anything of his wife. That has to be all given away.
Yeah. But he wouldn't have to give anything of his own away, would he?
I imagine this is what happens. They give everything. You're just left with what clothing you have on your back, and that's all. You have to start all over again.
During that period, when he had given away everything, how would he look after his children? Who would he call on to look after the children after his wife died?
The in-laws, the older people and the uncles, the rest of the family, they all pitch in together.
But it would be mostly the older people?
It's the older people, and there's younger brothers in the family or younger sisters that, you know, it's just the whole family pitch in together and help one another.
Now, on the same sort of theme.
This is a ghost that must have been writing. I'm there. I never seen you writing, and it's already written.
If a family was very poor for some reason, like if a man had taken sick and the family became poor, whose responsibility was it to make sure that the children didn't go hungry? Did the chief do something about it, or did just the relatives do something about it?
Are you referring to way back, or
yeah,
is it just
back.
Up late?
No, way back.
Like I told you before, they lived as a community. If you're part of a family, you never were left by yourself to starve or go hungry or go sick and be on your own. This was more of a community.
Yep.
And that part, everybody helped one another, and later on, after the priest came and people start living in log houses, you know, and living separate. Well, I think the chief more or less took over then. That's when they had these Indian constables and that, and he was the one that more or less took over and watched after all the people and seeing if anybody was sick and needed help. Well, he made sure that the able-bodied were to go and help this person out of wood or food.
How many children did
Seven, that's 12 children, 13 children. Five alive, three boys and two girls.
Five alive out of 13. How did she get the names for each of the children? Like, did she give any of you Indian names as well as white names? And does she remember at all how people would get their Indian names? How an Indian name would be picked for a child?
Look, I said, oh, yes, grandma said, I was at quest to miss a kind of mo. Look, I said, yeah, look, I'm a hoi, but squish, 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 Oh, Dr. Hahn, I suppose then that question to school this. No.
Yeah, must la be names no quakes no
quakes.
Learn the Bible.
The half cover the Bible.
Prior to the Catholic priests, when a child was born, either the grandparents or the direct parents gave them a name, whatever they think of, like, you know, either could be after an animal or something to do with nature. And then when later on, when the priests came, he insisted that they pick a name from the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
All biblical names. Anything that was supposed to be a Roman Catholic name.
Yeah. Did names that were picked, you know, prior to the priests, were any of those names handed down from relative to relative?
Yeah,
I looked, go, Mr. Mystic, I kind of moved, look, I saw, oh, yes, a quest.
I
guess that was, the name was handed down, like if an uncle or an aunt or a grandfather that was very well liked, well, the first child, first male child that was born was named right after him, whoever it may be, an uncle or grandfather that was very well liked. Well, the first male child in the family that was born was automatically named after him.
And it would be after a person that had died. You wouldn't be named after a person who was alive.
I
guess even when they're still alive, they can give their name to a younger child.
Oh, they can?
Oh, yes, they can. When they give their name, this I know is they generally, it's not only the name they give, they give you an Appaloosa horse to go with it or a nice buckskin jacket.
Oh, I see.
They always gave a gift along with their name.
When she got married, did the man she get married to give gifts to her parents?
That's A.
Some kind of funny way I'm going to translate it. Did he buy you?
Yeah.
It is some kind of funny the way I translated it.
Scamex. Say that like I thought I am extending the plan just to my age and bad bad. Gag six eyes extend as the am. I can look yellow in the asses, it's eyes to miss a knockoff, it's what the mate is stem. Look as the oys.
I spelled Peter Han work is no hope in my auntie. Look at me, it's a command just at my age. Oh, is no hope. Yamin Pia, yet old hoy.
She said that she didn't have no parents for my dad to buy her off of it. She said her auntie was so glad to get rid of her, they let her get married
But did some people do
it? She says way back, but after the priest and that came, they didn't do that anymore. They dropped all that, and that's when she got married by the Roman Catholic priest.
I see.
But prior to that, they did exchange gift.
Actually, that's a hook tonight.
From what she knows, that if a young couple gets married and they find out the girl is still a virgin, that is when the gifts really start coming towards the girl's parents. Not only the son, but his parents.
Oh, yeah.
They're so happy that the girl they got was a virgin, she's a good girl, that they start bringing gifts to the girl's parents. They find out the girl isn't a virgin, well, she's more or less used as a slave to the boy's family.
I wanted to ask about Indian doctors. Could women be Indian doctors as well as men, or could it just be a man?
So they believe that the women have more strength in being an Indian doctor than the men.
More strength.
They were considered stronger.
For a woman to become an Indian doctor, did she do the same training as a man would?
It's a lot of nohokers hachas, this is achas, and nohokers, jotas, is kweilus.
They train the same way, and just when a girl, just prior to time she turns young lady before her menstruation, she was taken away from the whole family. She had to be out on her own. She had her own place to sleep, and she never mixed with the people. She just stayed out among the wilderness and swam and done more running and exercising and walking all over the hills for all over a year, I imagine. Some days they never had months and weeks and that. They just went by the four seasons of the year, summer, winter, and fall, and spring. They just went by the four winds, they call them.
Before this happened, how would a person who is going to become an Indian doctor, how would that person be picked? What signs did they look for in choosing a person to train? Or was it something that a person decided for themselves?
There weren't any specially picked for Indian doctor. It depended entirely on the person. Like, there wasn't any girl or boy from any family that didn't go out. They all had to go and do their swimming and, you know, just as soon as they knew that they were going to this change, become a young man or a lady, well, they all had to go. It didn't, regardless of who it was, they all had to go and do the same thing. The swimming and practicing what they call hunting for their manitou. And I guess some were supposed to have been more fortunate than the others, that they did meet their manitou, and they were the ones that stayed away longer if they had the idea that they were finding a spirit that they believed in. They were the ones that stayed and did practice this Indian doctor. The ones that didn't find their manitou, well, after a year, they just came back and joined the rest of the family.
Did they do exactly the same thing, an Indian male or female doctor, when they were practicing that?
According to her, she said they do exactly the same. They swim every morning. Then they have this belief that instead of, like, to clean their in, they had to have clean stomachs. They had to clean themselves out. They take this certain kind of reed or rose bush, preferably, because for the simple reason they believe that the rose bush chased evil spirits away. So they used to take the young shoots and fold it in half with the folded end. They drank this water first thing in the morning, and then they put the stick down in their throat and they forced themselves to throw up. And this was supposed to clean out their stomachs. And you had a clean stomach and you were supposed to be long-winded. Well, all the boy and the girl went through the same thing. The only added thing that the boys had to practice was the bow and arrow.
Once a person had become a doctor, an Indian doctor, were some Indian doctors known for some types of cures and others known for other types of cures?
All just like a queen who talamoch who has stamus no hot excap ma stands as in toilets.
وشمس كلابينا نش قوا و يهاوس كأب أخلص أنا مدان إذا متخوفت وشمس كلاب كنالي تكتقويل شخص خكونا خلفت خخاء قمشلون ينكو خخاءون.
I guess the person really believed in it. It's, she said they, when an Indian doctor, if you had any kind of ailments, you went to an Indian doctor and he performed this dancing and, you know, witchcraft on you. She said they'd cure just about anything on you. And they believed it, that it did help them. She says different ones have different ways of doing. Some used herbs, they boiled certain herbs, and you had to eat certain different foods with the different herbs. And others just done the dancing and the, you know, the ritual performance. That's all. But she said that they varied. Some did had different ways of performing their Indian doctor.
When a person decided to become an Indian doctor and they wanted to learn some of the songs, some of the dances, and some of the remedies, some of the medicines, the herbs and whatnot, did they have to go and study with someone who's already an Indian doctor, or did they have to find out everything themselves?
And the way to see them after a wet and says it's a hale miss.
Well, it's not as much for you,
is that do miss?
My daddy, my do miss, and the way to see the shoe piece. My quarantine rate, how my hastes was up as corns. It's not as.
They had this belief that once they went out to practice their Indian doctor, they see their Manitou, and it could be in the form of a bear or just any animal, or it could be just about anything. And their belief was that if they're going to perform this medicine man on anybody, that this knowledge of how to cure their patient came from this Manitou, this spirit. He's the one that told them what to do, how to perform that, to take away what's bothering the person. It was done. They didn't go to another Indian doctor. They themselves supposed to have got this through their Manitou. He's the one that.
Well, what about learning about particular roots, particular leaves, one that were good to make medicine out. Was that something that anybody could learn, or just someone who's going to become an Indian doctor?
وقلمكو ايضا ملامس لقسويس وتقوين خيان قوس زاكس تقول كمين السيس وملامة لك اتشون سكاني انا ما قولك تغي مالتويلك سمس لها امي قلموك قوان سيسيكي وي تكسلا اسقك ملامة نستام انا كنت قوس نسنا نستامس وخيان كيوي نوكو تسنا اسك تشون دمس اسقل كمين سملامة
كايا جيتك شوات لها انا اتقوان تخشوك تشون كما وما قلتين غير ما تون جاي انا ما تون مخشوكي ما قونس ما ايشي ملامة.
This was the belief that there, the Manitou, that was in the dream that Manitou told him if he takes a certain kind of roots or maybe leaves or bark or whatever it would be, that he is to use this bark or remedy potion out of these things on this person, that this would help the person, and that's how they went about getting their medicines. It was through this Manitou that it was related to him that which remedies to use.
When a person did have these remedies and he went and cured someone, how was he paid? Did he get paid or did he do it free or?
I guess they used to give the Indian doctor something in return. It just didn't matter what it was. Well, you can imagine it might have been buckskin or some trinkets that they made, but they always did give him something for it.
Yeah, I guess.
Before the way back, I guess, in witchcraft offering was performed, they didn't give anything there. The witchcraft or the Indian doctor didn't accept anything in return. This he thought was to him was something he had to do to help his people. Until here, just lately, I guess, later on in her time, if a person performed Indian doctoring, well, they had the habit of having to pay him, or they wanted to give him something in return, he took it. They didn't know what it was to all these contagious diseases. Old age is what killed them. They died of old age. There was no kind of cold or pneumonia or all these things. There was no such a thing. They were, I guess, used to the cold and used to the wet, and their bodies were... They practiced this to endure the cold and rain and everything, that it didn't bother them.
When the person became an Indian doctor and was practicing, was there a tendency for their son or daughter to also become an Indian doctor? I mean, did it tend to go in families like that at all?
Yes, I guess they had a tendency to, like this Indian doctor, he was really a heavy believer in this going out and swimming and, you know, walking the hills and that, roaming. Well, he was so active in that himself that naturally the children were
pushed into the same thing. They had to go out, and then he himself encouraged them through his manitous, through his spirits.
What sorts of things besides curing did Indian doctors do? And did they try to forecast the future?
In other words, you mean cast spells on one another?
Could they cast spells?
They had a belief in, what would you call this, love potion? If you, if a person wanted to create a love potion, they had different roots and leaves or something that they mixed, and you had to swim and have these roots and mix it with some part of the, maybe say, your bit of your hair or something very close to your body. They mixed in with these herbs, and they done their witchcraft with it, and that was supposed to make a couple get along and love one another and never fight or leave one another.
Did they have a belief that an Indian doctor could make a person die?
As to say, no, what's in the If you were a person that was not doing any good for the other people, you're always just performing your witchcraft for damaging, you know, the life of other people. That is when another witch doctor could see that, and they cast spell on one another, and whichever was supposed to be the stronger of the two was to kill this other through witchcraft. This was a belief to them that it could have been possible that they could kill one another. But it wasn't done just because you wanted a guy out of your way, or it had to be that the guy that they cast a spell on wasn't doing right by the other people. If he was just doing witchcraft to harm other people, well, he wasn't allowed that. You're supposed to do witchcraft for the good of your people, not to harm them.
If a person, you know, if someone who's was a troublemaker or a bad actor, could an Indian doctor cast a spell on him to try and get rid of him?
He wouldn't do it on his own. It would have to be the other members of the tribe that wanted him corrected. They wouldn't get rid of him, like, say, kill him. They just cast a spell on him that he'd realize that what he's doing is not right by the people. The Indian doctor cast a spell on him that he might lose an eye or break an arm or break a leg, something that would show out to him that what he's doing is not pleasing to the people.
That's pretty well died out, I guess. Was the last person to do that sort of thing Big William?
Yes, he'd be the last one.
No one else knew how to do that after him.
How long ago was it since he died? 30 years?
It was before my time. Most of the life that I was born.
About 25, close to 30 years, somewhere between 25 and 30 years since our last medicine man died.
And no one has taken it up since. Could anyone else, besides a medicine man or an Indian doctor, cast a spell? Did anyone else know how?
That means no, because you had to have a manitou. You had to go and
and practice this and have your spirit, your Manitou, before you could do any of this casting spell or anything.
When a medicine man would cast a spell, when he was asked, who was it that would ask him? Would it be the chief, or just a group of people would go and ask him, or how would they get him to do it?
Well, according to her, she said it could be anybody from the members.
Anybody.
It didn't have to be the chief. It could be anybody at all.
And then he'd make up his mind whether or not he...
Yes, she said that he's supposed to be the wise man, they call him.
Mm-hmm.
He knows better whether he should or whether he should not.
You said that earlier when we were talking, you mentioned that the medicine man had a role in choosing who the next chief was going to be. What role did he play in that? How did he play a part in
that?
That
goes back again to his spirit, his Manitou. This Manitou is supposed to be a spirit that can see and knows what is best for the people and what is best, how to go about these things. So if the chief or the members of the band, the council, go to the medicine man and ask him his opinion of the person that's they're electing to be their chief, well, they'll ask this Indian, the medicine man, and his Manitou will tell him whether that man is a wise man, whether they can depend on him to be their chief. And if the medicine man says that this man is not dependable, we cannot depend on him, he's not wise, well, they in turn will have to select another person. So the medicine man had a lot to say in it.
Well, when chieftainship was hereditary, you know, from father to son, if a father only had one son, and the medicine man said that that son wouldn't make a good chief, who would they choose? Would it be just any other person, or would it be one of the old chief's relatives?
It would descend down onto, I imagine, like, say, it was a first cousin, but it has to be in the family.
In the family.
Yes, this is like you'd say you take the queen.
Yeah.
Well, this monarch, well, it stays, it's got to stay in the family.
Yeah.
So it has to go down to, if the son is not a wise man and he's not capable of looking after his people, well, they're going to pick another one, but it's got to be from the same family.
It couldn't be an in-law. It would have to be from the same family then.
From the same descendant. It has to be down...
Yeah.
Same descendant of the family.
Now, along with some of these beliefs, like with Medicine Man, did the Medicine Man have anything to do with dwarfs, or were dwarfs just a separate belief?
The queen could have talked to him, but I'm going to ask her about that. Step me, my lawyer, can I move her? It's an equestas, it's next to me, it's fine now. When now, come on, it's a cool marker, it's a queen, it was late this week.
She claims that
they believed that there was, it wasn't an Indian doctor that, you know, dreamt it or anything. She said the Indians long ago believed that there was little people, that one person was supposed to have gotten lost. And he went into a cave. There were some caves in some big mountain. And he'd gone into the cave and he went way down and he'd seen these little people. And she said, well, that must have been quite a good many years before the white man came. And later on, I guess she said, they figured, well, from all these trains and things like that, they just all seemed to have disappeared and nobody's ever seen them anymore.
What sort of things did they think the little these little people did? Were they evil or were they good, or did they do nothing? Did they have any influence on people?
I guess this is just a story that she heard, that when this man was lost, he was supposed to wounded a bear. And he followed this bear and it went down in a cave. So dark in there, he just kept it going, and all at once it brought daylight. But there was no sun, just a dull day like this, he said. And noticed these little people. And they had spears, and they were going to attack him, and he just kept hand motions that he didn't want to fight on, and then they made friends with him. This is supposed to be a story that she heard.
Other than that, you don't know what the little people did, what sort of things they did. Did they have any influence on people's lives?
The bed pan used my aunt Emo.
It's
the same man was supposed to have gone back down the next year where he seen the same cave and claims that they were all friendly people and he took gifts down for them, and but the other people were afraid of them. They wouldn't go near the cave or wouldn't even go with him. He was the only one that went back there, oh, say, about a year after. I guess apparently these little people that were all friendly people, when he brought gifts down for them, they dancing, and they were supposed to have had little huts made out of stick and hides. This was a story she heard about these little dwarfs.
Did they teach him anything?
Gan we say it extam kapelsa maksand that wit the summit spain that we wit kalamo target look by saka was in his extam.
Gan we say it in a spawos in a yoka.
Ta agiatin as kanmat wa kosh ba saka was. They couldn't understand one another, so I guess the guy couldn't learn anything. I guess they were kind to him. They didn't harm him in any way, but they couldn't understand.
This went as far as they were, the little people had some kind of little ponies, and the ponies lived underwater. They come up during the day to eat. Actually, there must have been a fairy tale like.
What about to say giants? I don't know.
As one shall command the child cook bill, come here,
was the man who was the one 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 who was the one
milk should know to eat for 100 sheep.
What would you call that? Out in heaven? Enemies they have to... They had a belief that these, I don't know what they call them, but they had a name for them. They call them the tall people. They lived in the mountains. And this must have happened not too long before, when she was just a young girl, was a girl disappeared. She'd been gone for a long time, and when she did manage to come back, she had a baby, a little boy. And she was the one that told of her being kidnapped by these tall men. And they lived just like everybody else, like the other, her own people. And she says that this tall people claims that one day that the people from the Indian people would see them again. They believed that they were real people. This had nothing to do with our Manitous or beliefs.
These were real people, and that they would come and see the Indians again sometime.
Yes.
When that happened, was it supposed to help the Indian, or was it, you know, under what circumstances was
that? She said that everybody would be happy once they got together and be good friends. She says that is a sign that everybody was going to be happy and everybody was supposed to help one another. This is a belief they had.
So these tall people were essentially friendly people rather than going to help.
Friendly people that were supposed to be a sign of good luck to the people, the Indian people.
Then that's very different than this belief about Sasquatches. Sasquatches are supposed to be threatening.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think they ever seen the Sasquatch.
Yeah.
This was supposed to be just like a human.
Well, these are
and the
exactly
way
like
the
humans.
Way I under the way it sounds to me that these tall people they're referring to must come from another tribe, because the Indian people themselves, like she says, never roamed out of their own area.
Mm-hmm.
Like you take the Shuswaps, they had their own hunting grounds, or fishing grounds where they picked their berries. She says they never went beyond that, because if they did, they said the enemy would be there. You didn't go into another tribe's area. You had your own area to live in. And they had these people like towards up the Kootenays. They were very tall, heavy-set people. And if you've seen one of them, well, you've seen a giant, a tall person.
Mm-hmm.
This tape was recorded in the early 1970s and left with Mary Thomas. We apologize for some eroded parts. Dawn Sawyer is interviewing Christine Allen, mother of Mary Thomas, who she always lovingly referred to as her professor. Whenever she got stuck for something cultural, she always went to her mother for answers. This is one way for her teachings to be handed down through the generations for which she will be remembered.